Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 1 Description of the Form of Bhagavan. Okay, page 64. Thus, in the above, it is understood that the Lord is manifested to the external senses of the jivas. He is manifested to the antakarna of the jiva with the statement, Nanyad Vijanati, one knows nothing except the Lord. The structure of not seeing anything else indicates that the Lord is infinite and that the whole universe is within his power, since the universe is his vibhuti. A person with pure heart who realizes him is not touched by the world's suffering. Maya santushta manasa sarva shukha maya disha. The person whose mind is completely satisfied in me finds only happiness wherever he goes. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14-13.
Why it says that the Lord manifests to the antakarna of the jiva?
Means to the internal. So in other words, he's seen by the senses externally and by the mind inside. Does that make sense? So what they're pointing out is since, you know, going from those first verses of the Bhagavatam, the Chaturshloki, then he is everything. So whatever you're seeing is the Lord. It's his energies. And whatever it is that you're feeling and experiencing, it's also the Lord. Difference is just what's your consciousness in the context of that. Are you seeing the Lord through anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, like this? So only at anandamaya, then that's devotion. Before that, you're seeing it at four material levels. Though all there is to see is the Lord, there isn't something else. So this idea, okay, well, there's a material world, then there's the Lord. No, it's just the Lord. There's only Brahman. There's nothing else. Right? And so then, so the Upanishad's pointing that out. And then once who sees with a pure heart, who realizes him, is not touched, then they are not touched by the world's suffering. So they're beyond the modes of nature. So they're unaffected. But the others, they're affected. If you're Dharmartha Kaman Moksha, you're affected, even though all you're seeing is the Lord, but you're not seeing it in the context of the Lord. And then, or you are, but it's in fruitive or liberation. Right? So then, in devotion, then it's seen beyond that. So you're not affected by the monks. So,
Maharaj, the person with the Vijnana Maya level is also affected by the guna.
Yes, because then he's affected by goodness. Yeah, because goodness has its problems. Like in Brahmaloka, they're all situated in goodness, but they suffer because other people suffer. They don't themselves personally suffer. You understand? But it's still on that external platform. It's goodness. Pure goodness, it means it's because the soul is the problem is with the soul.
But when we say that there are three types of spiritualists, like Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan.
Yes.
So this means person with at the Brahman level is affected by the guna?
It means if they're actually liberated, then no. But they'll be back. You know? Yes. Same with the yogi. Because the yogi may realize Paramatma, but then they'll merge into the Lord and then move back to the Brahman platform. If they're realized, but how many are realized? So basically, without devotion, you can't get liberated. Without bhakti, Without Mukunda, without Krishna, you can't get liberated. So basically you could say is they're nicely situated. But technically being actually liberated, they're not. That's why then Madhvacharya is talking about being actually liberated. You know, it means as in comparison to everybody else and being situated because you're constant, like because you have, of transcendentalists, you have, it means within that, the levels, you have the neophyte, you'll have those who are constant, and then those who are actually realized. Right? So technically you can't become realized except through devotion. You know, it may be through the path, you're using jnana, you know, but you can't actually be liberated without that. So that aspect is not really generally known. Because when you say that they may go to Mahakalapura and be absorbed in Brahman realization, you can just say that's constant, because they're not. They're still in the material world. So how, you know, within the material phenomena? They're not in the universe. So how are they actually liberated? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, you know, it's just you're moving out of one immediate problem into a longer-term problem. You haven't actually solved the problem. Does that make sense? So we'll talk about it, that they're liberated and this and that, but actually they're not. Does that make sense? You know, as far as discussions here go, just like we'll say these billionaires are rich, you know, compared to us and that, but in actuality, they're not rich. You know, I say two zamindars, right? Two brothers. Their profit was 2 million gold coins a year. And that was 500 years ago. So what could you get for that? Prabhupada said when he was, you know, 100 years ago he was talking, you know, so that'd be more, you know, like 140 years ago, like that. He was saying that for one paisa, you could buy more vegetables than a man could carry. You know, and you've seen Calcutta, they have those big baskets, you know, those kind of flat square baskets, and they can carry 70, 80 kilos in there. Like that. So you could buy more than that. So it means how much money they had. So these guys today, they're billionaires, really, you know, then they're thinking that these were village guys. They were sitting in the village. They were tax collectors in the village level. So and they would make that. So then, I mean, and on top of that, this is just a side point, just for fun, is that the reason that they were so rich, because they weren't married. So that means they had 10 times more stuff than they would normally have, right? Normally they would only have, you know, 1/10 of what they had, so. That makes sense. Yeah.
But more dharma.
Huh?
More dharma.
Yeah, that's what I said. You get what you pay for. The dharma costs money. Yes.
When a person is full to the process of meditation and other things, do they get an artha nibbita?
Do they get?
An artha nibbita.
Anartha nibbita means they're purified, passion and ignorance and that, and they're situated in goodness. But they don't get the pure goodness. So that's the whole point. They may be very well situated in goodness, and they can merge into the Brahman. But the problem is that now when after getting bored sitting in Brahman, then you want to do something. So what activities do they know? They only know what's in the material world, so they'll come back. So they're not technically liberated. You know, it'd be just like throwing the ball up in the air and that moment it stops. We call that liberation. You know? But the next moment is coming back down. Right? But the point is that moment happens outside the universe. Does that make sense? So you're working on this more, how you say? You know, time according to Vishnu. Does that make sense? So one universe is 3/4 of a second. So if you were in a place where you were having so much trouble and this and that, so much anxiety, and I put you in this room, you know, you're wearing white, everything's white, the lights are very bright, everything like that, you can't see anything, but you have a nice chair, you can sit down and just relax. and there's nothing else in the room. Okay? Then how long you can sit there? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes? And then you have to do something. You know? So you, yes, you are liberated compared to the universe, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 lifetimes of Brahma. But it was only 20 minutes. So, you know, it's just like if I come, I give you a briefcase, and it's full of, you know, so much money. And then I say, this is yours. And then after, you know, 20 minutes, I take it away. Can you really say you were rich? You can tell all your friends, yeah, you know, did I tell you the story about the time I was rich for 20 minutes, you know? Yeah, you've told us a million times. No, hey, what, you know, but, you know, and then you go ahead and talk, right? So that's the whole point, is compared to here, it seems like, oh, that's forever. But in reality, it's not.
Can you say that the highest level is equal to our level of nishtha?
I'm not even sure you can say that, but I could, you can, I mean, you can make comparisons. They're steady, the devotee in Nishtha is steady, but the devotee, he's actually liberated. He may be still affected by the modes because of his consciousness, but the point is he's not working within the material phenomena. He's not under the control of Yamaraj, in a sense. You know, so it's different. So it switches into you're looking at the platform of the soul. So in that way you can say they're the same. But someone, that devotee who's on Brahma Bhuta, that you could say their vision will be basically the same. But the level of vision, mechanical vision, will be the same. But the devotee will see everything in connection with the person, while the Brahma body doesn't know that. That's the Uttama. That's Baba. Yeah. So it's just it's a different thing. So how do you compare?
Because when they describe Chinese or Buddhist, their understanding of liberation is very similar to our how we describe Nishtha.
Yeah, that's what, the point. Is that's what we're saying? Is that they become steady. So it's basically, that's as far as they get. They're not actually liberated. Only devotees are. So from that context, then you could say, yes, the devotees are neophyte. Then when they come to the Madhyama platform, then that's basically, that is that's all the farther they get. They'll talk as if they're on the third platform, but they never actually get them. You know, some of them. The concluding statement in this section of the Upanishad is as follows. The liberated jiva sees in this way, thinks and knows. He enjoys, plays, has relationships, and experiences bliss with the Lord. He becomes independent, wandering in all the worlds as he pleases. Those who know something else, who know differently, are subject to destruction. They cannot wander as they please in all the worlds. Chandogya Upanishad 7:25-2. Right, so, yeah. So that's the point, is that you're looking at the levels of consciousness. They can only get up to that fourth level. You talk about, yes, okay, they're touching that aspect of Anandamaya because they're dealing there, but because they're not actually situated there, they don't actually understand the Anandamaya Purush as a person. So then their situation there is, like it says, vague. You know, because, you know, sometimes it's said that they're on that platform. At least they'll talk about it on that platform. And in reality, they're not. Does that make sense? You know, so they maybe have something, but they're not actually. They're situated on the lower. while for the devotee, the sadhaka, he will be situated in Vijnanamaya, but his consciousness is going to Anandamaya. It's just that's his situation. Well, they won't get past that situation, really. Because liberation is that situation. But they're not actually liberated. That's only an Anandamaya. You know, saying it's fine when you get down to it. I mean, in general discussions, we don't have to go to this fine degree. But when you're trying to point out where they, how far they get. So here is that when you're saying he enjoys, he sees, only the devotee is seeing like that. Others may get like that and have this, that they'll see everything connected to Brahman. So they're seeing it and connecting to him, but they're only seeing it on the Vijnanamaya platform. The devotee sees it on Anandamaya, that it's the person. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's a difference.
And Maharaj, the pure devotee is always seeing at the Ananda level.
Yes, yes. So their seeing is different. It's pointed out. Prabhupada points out, the acharyas point out, that he sees. So it's not that the senses don't contact the sense objects that are around and he doesn't see that. But that's not actually what he's seeing. He's seeing how that item connects to the Lord, how the vibhuti reminds him of the Lord. You know, the vibhuti, a situation, an activity, a pastime. You know, some quality, some devotee. So that's what they're actually seeing. Not that they can't, they don't see the things here, because we see is they don't bump into anything. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, we're not talking, they say, platform 9 3/4. You know, it's just, you just, they just don't bump into anything. Yes?
Also, Acharya's commenting on that, Goloka Namni Nijadamni Talechatasya verse in Kama Samhita, they say that Shiva Loka actually has two parts.
Okay.
One is in within the layer of false ego, mm-hmm. which is called Mahakalapura.
Okay.
And all impersonalists, they just go there, they don't pass that region.
Okay.
And then Sadashiva Loka is beyond the material.
Okay, so that's outside with Mahavishnu.
Exactly.
Okay.
So they can actually go beyond that level.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes it even more exact.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Nice. Okay. This shows the Lord with qualities. Other examples from Scripture can also be given. Therefore, this is the correct meaning of na stanatopi. The Lord's qualities are not material upadis. Brahma Sutra 3:2-11. Right? So it says here, the Lord's qualities are not material upadis. So it doesn't mean that there aren't. It means that they're there, they're real, they're spiritual. One cannot say that the personal Brahman is something different from Brahman without qualities. Only one Brahman is praised in all scriptures and in all schools of teaching. Sarve Veda Yad Padam Amananti. All the Vedas describe the Lord. Katha Upanishad 1:2-15. Na Vedad Iti Chen Na Pratyedam Atad Vachanat. If you say the explanation is not logical because the forms are actually different, it is not so, because Shruti states that all the forms are not different from the Lord. Brahma Sutra 3:2-12. And so, yeah. And thus one group maintains, Ekam Eva Dvitiyam Brahma. There is one Brahman and nothing else. Chandogya Upanishad 6:2-2. Right? So, they're taking these points and these other points that we mentioned before, they're leaving those. Because they don't know how to deal with that. Right? So they're taking that aspect, but it says there's only one Brahman. So the impersonal aspect, that's Krishna, it's his effulgence. But it has all the qualities, it's the effulgence of his qualities. Therefore, it's Brahman with qualities. But its point is they're Krishna's qualities. So Krishna is Brahman. But there's three features: the personal, the impersonal, and the localized. Right? So they're all one entity. The sutras thus say, Api Chaivam AK. Moreover, one group of Veda scholars teach this. Brahma Sutra 3:2-13. One should not claim that statements in the Bhagavatam like the following do not approve of difference, duality. From the four types of evidence, Vedic knowledge, direct experience, traditional wisdom, and logical induction. One can understand the temporary nature of the material world, by which one will become detached from the duality of this world. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.17. Though the word vikalpa in the above can mean detachment from the variety in the world, it really indicates that detachment from the world results from being fixed in the Lord. Thus, by accepting internal difference, svagat bheda, like an earring made of gold and jewels, that is denied is different in the Lord by inclusion of another entity. Since other things in the Lord are ishaktis, they are not different entities. Having a nature similar to in status to his sajatiya, and since the Lord through his avakya has shaktis, they are not completely different entities, vijatiya, which produce insentient and suffering within the Lord. Right? So they're not different entities that cause a problem in the Lord. With us, the differences here cause suffering in us. But in the Lord, the differences don't cause suffering, because they're non-different from him. He is Anandamaya. So he's always, you know, he is bliss. Right? But when these become transformed here, then because we are not the Anandamaya Purush, we can be connected to and then therefore be situated in Ananda. But we're not Ananda. Somebody said, right? We have the qualities of, but we're very small, so we can become easily covered by the material nature. So only when we take shelter of the internal potency, then we come into that position where we will always be on the transcendental platform. Yes?
Can we say that in the spiritual world, the jiva becomes Ananda, not Purusha, but Ananda?
Yeah, it means they're manifest, because if you're the example is given iron and fire. It's as good as fire. It means you can technically tell the difference, but who does?
Because when we say that the Lord is not suffering from his shaktis,
yes,
and we do here, because that's not ours,
yes,
then in the same logic, when we go to the spiritual world, we won't suffer because they become ours?
No, because now we recognize that they're Krishna's. See, as in the material world, they're not ours, and we say they are. Well, in the spiritual world, we know they're not, because they're Krishna's. So the point is when we try to deal with the energies separate from Krishna, that's where the problem comes up. But the point is as the Lord, he's non-different. Therefore, when we accept that non-difference, right, they're not ours, they're Krishna's, then we also don't suffer. When you see everything connected to Krishna, that's when you don't suffer. And Krishna sees everything in connection to him, so. But he never had the problem in the first place.
But when we get to the spiritual world, the nature and our nature will become similar in quality. That's also the reason we're not suffering?
No, we're not suffering because anyway, as it is now, our qualities in Krishna are non-different. But we're not seeing it in that context. So where is the problem happening? It's happening on the level of consciousness. So when the consciousness is absorbed in the Lord, that's when the suffering stops. But when the consciousness is separate from the Lord, that's when we suffer. So
it may say about rasa vaisa, that he is rasa. It implies that it is only for him as a person, not for the shaktis. Or can he also say that it may apply to the shaktis also, because there is
the rasa vaisaha means he is rasa.
Yeah.
How are we rasa?
Not we, the internal shakti.
I mean, that's where we're going to start. Because the Marwari is saying, first take the little finger, then take the whole hand. Yeah. That's what it says here. Traditional wisdom. Four types of evidence. Yeah. You know, you don't come in big, you come in small and then take the whole thing. No. Energies. You mean internal potency. And then once it's established, energies. Hey, we're energy. You have to be careful of means. See, you have the floor and you have your foot. Right? Foot on the floor is okay, but when foot's on a banana peel, then it's slippery. So you have to watch out for banana peels. any sense? Krishna is rasa. That's him. He is the energetic. Why would we say the energy is would be the same? If it's the same, then it's him. Because there's difference, that's why it's the energy. But at the same time, is there's no difference between the energetic and the energy. You have to know where to apply sameness, where to apply difference.
I'm wondering what the term antahkarana exactly means.
Means the subtle body. How we use the term subtle body?
So it's only pertaining to the conditioned souls, that's it.
Means you can take it across, but it's specifically talking about us, because that's why we're... Means, in other words, these kind of discussions aren't a necessity for those in the spiritual world.
Okay, yeah.
They don't have any misconceptions.
Yes.
Right? So it means to grow the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, and the polluted consciousness. Mm-hmm. That's the antahkarana.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then the point is when the consciousness is pure, the identity is as servant of Krishna, and that, so therefore the mind and intelligence are and senses are engaged in the Lord's service, then the same thing applies, but you're always absorbed in the Lord. So.
Yes.
Just as the Nyayikas say that absence of light is darkness, one can only conclude that the Lord lacks a body devoid of shakti, of bliss and knowledge. Okay. So this means taking their philosophy?
No, produced by mind.
I think it's just explained the logic. Nyayika's logician.
Which is produced by mind.
Mm-hmm.
Continues.
Okay. One can only conclude the Lord lacks a body devoid of shakti, of bliss and knowledge, which is produced by maya, experienced as material worries. Simply by the lack of material qualities, one cannot conclude that only the Lord exists with no qualities at all. This is an unfavorable conclusion, even for pure monists. Right? So absence of light is darkness. But the point is the principle is still darkness is the shakti. You know? So for there to be an absence of light and darkness, but the point is of the two, the light is the major and the darkness is the minor. So they're trying to say is that therefore if you remove the darkness, which is all the body and the senses and the miseries that are there, then you'll only have the Lord. Right? But the point is they don't understand about the transcendental shaktis. They're only seeing the transformation. You know, because then again we have to start all over and go back to that whole thing again. So even for the monist, it's not a good way to start. Because then the problem comes is that you remove all this, where did it come from? So even for them, it doesn't work. So that means darkness has to be coming from Krishna. It can't be a separate entity. Does that make sense? But what we're pointing out is that it's not on an equal level. The shaktis have different potencies, right? So why we'll put the point is that there's lack of light is darkness, so that we don't have this thing that the devil is on an equal platform with God. He controls the world, God can't control it, you know, and all that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So it's just to avoid this dualistic aspect. But in actuality, darkness is coming from. Because otherwise, where did the angel come from in the first place? One may claim that it is proved that Brahman alone exists and nothing else by negative statements, neti neti. Brahman is not the world and not the jiva, which are made repeatedly. Probably, right? By negative statements which are made repeatedly.
Yeah.
But actually those statements mean that Brahman and other things exist. There is duality, not monism. Having accepted duality in Brahman by such negative statements, right? So then there's no monism because you're saying there's Brahman and then there's the jiva and the material energy as a separate thing that has nothing to do with Brahman. So then you're actually a dualist, though they'll claim to be a monist. You know, so they'll say there's just lack of light is dark, you know, is darkness. So they're trying to say that there's one thing. But the problem comes down is that then they're creating a duality. Right? Having accepted duality in Brahman by such negative statements, since Brahman exists with other entities, the argument that because of non-duality the world does not exist is also false. Right? So you're saying the world doesn't exist, but then you're also saying is you have a duality. If everything's Brahman, then what we call the duality, the material world, the jiva, they also have to be Brahman. Like that. Otherwise, the world doesn't exist. You know, then what's Brahman? What's anything? So you have to have the point is that it's all Brahman, but there's variety in Brahman. There's different energies. Right? So that makes sense.
This is more or less what all spirit soul is looking about happiness, about
yes.
relationship like that.
Yes, yes.
So can we say that even if the Mayavadi are negating Krishna, but the soul is accepting to look for happiness?
Yes, that's why they talk about Brahmananda.
Yes.
Because as a soul, they're still as a person, they still need a goal. So that was the point that Lord Chaitanya was making, and it was being made here before, is that because liberation is a goal, right? Therefore, they're striving for it. So there has to be that concept of ananda. That's why there's so much discussion about it. But the point is how ananda is experienced because there's an object to project that towards. You have to be conscious of an object, be able to perceive an object, and then you have ananda. So then they're trying to say, no, it'll be ananda without that. But then how does that work? It's not logical. They'll say, oh, it's inconceivable. But the point is it doesn't make any sense. They're working for an ananda that is perceivable. So that means they still have qualities, they still have, you know, mind and senses to appreciate it. Like that. So yes, everything's Brahman, but you have to understand it means everything's on the transcendental platform. Everything's coming from the transcendental platform. And so then it's only the consciousness that we're seeing otherwise. But even that is the potency of the Lord. So the transformation of the energies, then you get the material and spiritual. So the living entity themselves, then they have to be appreciated that they exist, but they're a variety within of the Lord. So there's the Lord and his potencies. And then we're a variety within the potencies. So... the claim that non-existence is invariably connected with a real object, because Brahman is real, world must be false, cannot be accepted. If a pot does not exist on the earth, the creation of a pot cannot take place again. Its non-existence is not necessarily paired with something existing. Right? If something doesn't exist, it's just not there. You know. So then they're trying to pair. That's the thing is that they make these statements, they create a duality, and then they try to give examples to show how it's one, even though they've created a duality. So they're always trying to prove it's one. Two things are one. But that there are two things that can become one, that already their philosophy is it's two. Right? Does that make sense? Because they're saying everything is one. That means that there's Brahman and everything else. Right? So just in that statement alone, it's already... So, therefore, we have to understand. So, it's correct, because everything is Brahman. Yeah, sarvam kalvidam brahma. So, what does that mean? That means Brahman has internal variety. And that can be manifest or not. And so, the manifestation is non-different, right? But different. It has visesha, it has its uniqueness. But the point is it's still based on Brahman. That makes sense. So right from the beginning, their core statement is already establishing that either that there's two and they're not monists, you know. But for it to be correct, it has to be that all these things exist, but they exist as varieties within Brahman. So Brahman has qualities. So just from their core statements already establishing Brahman has qualities, but transcendental. And because they have no idea of this, therefore they're trying to prove it, and so they're just talking duality. They're spending all their time trying to say two becomes one. But they're starting with two. Right? So we say, no, there's one entity, non-dual entity. But because there's variety, therefore then there's all the name, form, qualities, pastimes, and associates, and everything like that. So
it's a complete reverse process.
Yes.
As an instrument to help them to establish apparently monism, so they go one, then two, then many, because then Shankara establishes Panchopasana. Then they say from many comes one, and we say from one comes many.
Yes.
So it's just opposite.
Yes.
Use.
Yes. Yes. Because that's because of the Ajnana Shakti. Because of the being under the influence of the Lord's Shakti and ignorance, not the mode of ignorance. That also, that is thrown in for extra. You know, so that it's already they're in the mode of ignorance. I mean, they're in ignorance because they don't know the Lord. Then they're within the material world. So then in the Mahatattva, they're under the mode of ignorance. You know, and then like that. So then that's how you'll have the variety of these impersonal. Like that. You get, depends upon on which modes are there. More goodness, other things are there, you know, what mix is there. So then you get all these different schools. But they're all ultimately impersonal. Except for Vaishnavs, everybody's impersonalist.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, it's just a matter of whether they're compatible with personalists or not. Like contemporary religion, then they're ultimately impersonalist because they say God has no form. They'll talk about him as a person and all the qualities and everything and how he interacts and all these things, but at the same time, is they'll say ultimately there's nothing. You know, it's just there's no form. So the problem, so it's a difficulty there because they have that problem because of not understanding properly the Vaishnav Siddhanta. But they're compatible in that they can relate to a concept of God and working in that way. Unless they're too attached to their particular form, then they can't accept anybody else. But, you know, ultimately when they get over that one, then like that. Does that make sense? Well, the impersonalists, they can relate to the renounced activities and spiritual activities, but they can't relate to a person. So then they'll have problem there. So that's a worse problem. You know. Because we put so much emphasis on the external, we'll think they're doing better, but actually they're worse. The internal problems are worse than the external. Yes?
Maharaj, in relation with this philosophy, before Jiva Goswami explained that what is the perception of people in mode of goodness, passion and ignorance, like in goodness, they can see what is generally unseen, the reality which is generally unseen. And in passion, people see only the forms they want to see because they want to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
In ignorance, one sees the forms as harmful to oneself. So the impersonalist is more of ignorance because they see things as harmful. Because anything which is having a personal aspect is harmful. That's why the whole philosophy is reversed.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, nice.
And then passion is the Brahmavadis. They only want to look at, they're only interested in Brahman in one sense. They don't have any problem with the person, but they only want to see Brahman because that's what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And what people who can see attitudes are only the Vaishnavas.
Yeah. So then it's just a matter of within the ignorance then. What for? So they have some goodness within ignorance. Yeah. sense difference is unavoidable by the previous logic, right? Because you're saying that there's Brahman and then there's everything else, the material world and the jiva. Then difference is unavoidable. So internal difference must operate in Brahman. Otherwise, why is there a perceived difference? Because if everything is Brahman, that means there must be difference that is able to be perceived. Because if everything is Brahman, that means all these things have to have their origin in Brahman. But, as we see, is Brahman being not affected by the material modes and all that, then Brahman does not suffer. Brahman is beyond that. So that means then there must be transcendental activities and interactions and relationships. Because the ones here then cause a problem. So the problem is not because there's forms and qualities. The problem is we don't see those forms and qualities connected to the Lord. That's the problem. Okay, so now the doubt. So this must be another doubt, right? So
continuing on that point.
Okay. So Purvapaksha, the doubt. Since Brahman is without difference, the perception of internal difference in Brahman is false, like seeing shell as silver. Since Brahman is said to be indescribable with no qualities, right? So they say indescribable means there's no qualities. Can't be that it's indescribable means there's so many qualities you can't, or the qualities are so wonderful that you can't, or like that. They just say, oh, indescribable means no qualities. Oh, I had lunch today. It was, you know, how I was so good. I can't even describe it. Oh, you mean there was no lunch? You didn't have a lunch. You know, that's my values. I had a fabulous non-lunch today. Yes. Uttara. Right? That is not so. Qualities like knowledge are unavoidable in Brahman's sarup, according to the previous explanations. Though the remaining sarup devoid of ignorance and its effects is indescribable. Brahman had no internal differences, qualities like knowledge. Brahman itself would be destroyed at the root, because if we say there's nothing, then that means Brahman doesn't exist either. We're saying nothingness is Brahman, but that means that there's just nothing there, doesn't exist. So non-existence. We're saying no, it exists. So that's the difference you could probably say, is the mighty body say this nothingness exists, while the Buddhists say the nothingness is nothingness. Right? Yeah. It is not true that what is indescribable in a substance is always false. This idea is not applied to Brahman. Anir rupte nilayane. It is indescribable and independent. Taittu Upanishad 2.7.1. In this world, there is bewilderment on seeing substances like medicine, which can destroy the three doshas indescribably. Since logic does not apply in accepting mutually contradictory qualities in an object, the influence of gems and mantras is also inconceivable or indescribable. Right? So he's giving an example that medicines, the doshas are out of balance. You take the medicine, it balances the dosha. That's what it's doing. Right? So you can't see that. You can't. So it's indescribable how, you know, like that. Same, so. Yeah.
We can just experience that.
Yeah. Achintya kalu ye bhava natam starkena yojayet. Inconceivable states are not subject to logic. Mahabharata. This again, these periods? Yeah, whatever. Similarly, so that which is inconceivable is not subject to logic. Doesn't mean that you can't describe it to some degree, you know, according to one's realization, but it doesn't mean that logic is what's going to reveal it. That's very important, because we're working on that logic becomes the authority. But logic means something you perceived, then now you speculate on, so the inference, right, the anuma, that becomes the authority rather than shabda. Shabda is the authority. It means the shastra's authority. So what you hear from authority, you'll contemplate, but it has to be according to authority. But they're making it know that their contemplation, that's the authority. So even verses in the Veda and all that, they'll say, That's not correct. Vyasadeva wasn't correct. So it's their speculation. They take that as the authority. Right. Similarly, Brahman, because of its inconceivable nature, has qualities which are mutually contrary. Not knowing the nature of a substance, one can still experience things which are contrary or inconceivable in medical science. But, so that's the thing, is that if there's no contrariness, we'll say it's logical or straightforward. So when there's contrariness, that's where the problem comes. But that's the point, is if Brahman is the source of everything, that's why it is what it is. Because then it has these aspects. Does that make sense? In the present matter, the experience of the learned following the Vedas is proof that Brahman has indescribable qualities. Right? So those who are learned in it, they're following the Shastras. For them, then they appreciate their realization that comes from that. That's the proof of these indescribable qualities. Yes.
Right, here many times these examples of jams and mantras are also quoted to describe them. And it is indescribable, but yet we experience.
Mm-hmm.
So is that one of the main reasons that is, the name is always included in our sadhana process, because we are always seeing that, experiencing what is indescribable.
Yes, because the whole point of sadhana is putting yourself in contact with the indescribable as much as possible, in a regulated way. Because otherwise, if you do something and then you stop and you're doing that, you don't progress. You progress by every day. Right? That's how it works. And so, one sadhana means how to keep in contact with the Lord and the Vaishnavas. You know, in whatever methods are recommended. You know, then through hearing, through chanting, remembering the deity worship, all these different aspects. So that one has the best possibility to actually experience the transcendental platform. Because Krishna is saying, by tasting a higher taste, you give up the lower. So for us, there's some taste in material energy. How often that taste is not very often. Like if I ask you, okay, when was the last time you ate a preparation that was just really struck you as really fabulous? You know, and then you have to think back and, you know, okay, yeah, here. Okay, when was the time before that? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that there's a few moments. Right? Because you take it and you taste it, wow, this is fabulous. And then you start talking about it, so you're not experiencing it. And then, you know, a couple more bites and then it's not as much of the taste. Then you keep eating, trying to get that taste back, but until you're full and you can't eat anymore. Right? So if you take all your experiences of everything fabulous and put it all together, you know, you'll have maybe a few seconds. But our whole existence is based on that. It's the experience, it's not the logic. People say, oh, it's the logic, I'm logical, I'm intelligent, I'm rational. No, it's your experience. Say whatever they want. So that's the point is therefore the experience of those who are learned. That will be the proof. So the apta, they're the ones that you follow. So. Paramatma is contrary and not contrary. Is mano and not mano. Is speech and not speech. Is Indra and is not Indra. Is action and is not action. Paingi Shruti.
Never heard before.
No. Well, there were so many. That's the thing. It's Madhvacharya, his time, he's quoted, then later on, they're not even available. Because they're all on handwritten things, and all you need is some bugs, and they're gone.
You know? Also, Chaturveda Shika, especially mentioned that. We don't have access to Chaturveda Shika, which Madhvacharya.
Yeah.
In this case too, you want the period after the parentheses, or only when it's if there's another sentence following it?
Here, if it's one on its own, it works.
That's fine. But if there's a sentence after it, then...
Yeah, sentence after it, or even if there's sentences before.
Okay.
Oh, I see, because in the Bhagavatam that we have the sentence, then we put the...
Yeah, but generally there's like a dash for either way.
Yeah.
But it's still...
But here it's obvious because you're quoting one thing and then seeing it here. But right. It's also good in these things that you can also put parentheses. That always helps. Not parentheses, quotation.
Yeah.
You know, so what he's speaking, that's the main text. And when he's quoting something, then that could be within. Yeah.
That separates them.
Then you can tell. So then it could be after. But if there's another sentence, then the problem comes is that it's within the next sentence. So then it would be, according to Pāṅgī Sūtra, then right. Is this. So you have to put it at the end of the other one. Naishta tarkena matir apaneya. This knowledge cannot be achieved by logic. Katu Upanishad 1:29. Means we discuss things logically so that we're open to trying to be involved in it or connected to it or associate with it. Right? But it's not that logic itself will achieve it. Not that logic itself will reveal it. Because it's beyond. Because logic is based on your intelligence. Right? And your intelligence is going to function according to your identity and your quality of mind, your samskaras. That's how it's going to function. Right? So the difficulty comes up is that if your intelligence, your samskaras and all that aren't so well developed. Yeah, so fast today. Yeah. Yes. So the difficulty comes up is that
samskaras.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about the elephant.
Yeah,
so because of the samskaras, you're going to be limited because you're working within the modes. So logic works within the modes. So there's more goodness, it'll work better. But still, even if it's good, even nicely situated goodness, goodness of goodness, it's still goodness. It's not pure goodness. And so, therefore, it can understand transcendence, which is beyond, which is pure goodness.
Well, it mentions over here that this logic cannot be achieved by logic. The knowledge over here means, this. The word knowledge means realization.
Knowledge means you understand it.
Even the basic understanding is not possible through logic. I was thinking that with logic, at least the basic understanding can be gotten, but not realization.
How would it? Mm-hmm. How can you understand something that's outside the purview of your consciousness? Right? I mean, as we're saying, when you're applying the citta, you know, the polluted consciousness. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to you're applying it within the context of which level of consciousness are you working at, right? So if you're working in Anandamaya, then you can perceive that. But if you're working at Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha, how you'll perceive Ananda, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, what are your samskaras? Are your samskaras in Vishuddha Sattva? If they're not, then they're going to be within Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha. So even you using the intelligence, it doesn't mean that you can... You understand? It's just, it has to be accepted that you cannot gain through logic. That doesn't mean it's sentiment. It means it's practical application, but there has to be this point of faith. Faith comes by association. So just seeing, I'll sit down in my living room in my big armchair in front of the fire and figure it all out, it won't. It won't happen. It's by association with devotees. That's the whole point. And that means then you're going to practically apply something, which is the bane of, you know, scholars. They want to be able to sit in their chair and do everything. They don't want to actually get up out of the chair and have to do something. Right? Yes.
About logic. We have in Moscow, we consider that the logical school is most strong.
Which school?
In Moscow, philosophical school,
in Moscow.
Yes, and in all of our cultures, we consider that their school is more strong. And one professor from this school, he was a very strong logician. When we gave him a book of Sukhot Aswami Maharaj, Shadows and Reality, he accepted that this logical is not possible, his logic is not possible
to go beyond that.
And he was agreed that our logic is better than his logic. Doesn't mean that we also use logic in our epistemology.
We're using a logic, but the point is when logic is in the context, see, is where does knowledge come from? See, we're taking it, knowledge is just, you know, what is it? How do they define knowledge? They'll just say facts or, you know, collecting facts or something like that. But the point is, knowledge is to be able to, is that power of removing doubts, removing misconceptions, so you come to the proper conclusion. Right? So that's potencies. We're not in control of the potencies. Right? It means man always wants to say he is. But, you know, it's becoming a little bit more obvious that he's not. You know, the effects of him dealing with, you know, just the things, the elements of this world, however he likes, without considering the laws of nature, now are starting to have effects. It means they've always had, but now you're really starting to see. You know, like that. So that's the whole point, is that it's there's higher powers that make everything work. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, I can go into the refrigerator. I can open the door. I can close the door. I can move things around in the refrigerator. I can move it from the refrigerator to the freezer, from the freezer to the refrigerator. I can even flick the switch that can make the refrigerator into the freezer and the freezer into the refrigerator. Like that, I can move the temperature. I can, you know, how you say, we control the horizontal, we control the vertical, right? Yeah? So all that. But if there's no electricity, what do you control? You only control it because the electricity is there. So that's the whole point, is logic on its own can't get you the understanding of transcendence. It won't even get you the material things. It's because you're following the laws of nature that Krishna has given in the context of that. Therefore, you get knowledge. Does that make sense? You know, so you have to follow the rules of nature that govern the area of knowledge that you're interested in. Then, so there's higher authority, higher knowledge is there. Higher power is there. Right? So, then if you want to understand, and that's even just within the material, so it's beyond, that means you have to have that transcendental potency. So that you'll only get in the context of the parampara. So when you, the books, the devotees, and the activities that are coming that has that chit potency, then you can understand it. So he's reading the book because it's been compiled by a devotee, you know, based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Therefore, it has that potency. So it's not that logic won't be satisfied. It's just that by logic you can't get there.
So can we say that logic can give us access to belief in Sambandha, but we can't go more?
No, it's applying logic in the context of devotees and devotional service. Right, then you'll get that sambandhagyan. Otherwise, they don't have sambandhagyan. I mean, just because you know about it, it's just like, let's say, you could probably find, you know, some kids, and they can tell you all about the fine details of, let's say, like a Ferrari or something like that, and this year's this, and that, and this number, and what are the variations, and all that, and what kind of, you know, what you can, the interiors you can get, and everything like that. There's a good chance they've never seen one, never sat in one, and can't even drive. So, is that real? So this idea that just because I got it, I have it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that it's taken that, no, if I have the fact, you know, written down or in my memory, then I have it. But the point is you have to be able to apply it to say you have it. Just like, let's say, you have lots of money in a bank account, but you don't have the card. You can't use it. So do you actually have money? No. You know, by anything, you can say, yes, I have some, but you really don't. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that just because they have some facts and they've learned some words and stuff like that, doesn't mean that they actually have. That's why the point is coming to the point of faith. Now that's real. Because the other ones, what does it do? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you give a kid, you know, a coin. And, you know, it's some old coin and it's worth a lot of money. But do they know how to take it and get that money? No, they'll just take it down to the store and buy a candy bar. So do they actually have that much money? No, they only have whatever that coinage is worth. Because to them it doesn't mean, they can't do anything with it. So just because they have it, if they're not using it, can you say they actually? No, you say they're foolish. They have a regular coin, then they're a kid. But they have this coin that's worth, let's say, $100,000 or something, and they only use it to buy a candy bar, then before they were a kid, and that's okay, kids buy candy bars. Now they're an idiot. You understand? So that's the point, is that they're scholars and they try to work in these areas and they think they're so smart, but actually then when you're dealing with transcendence and they don't know, can't use it, then they're idiots. They're fools. You know, Prabhupada's more kind. He uses the word fool. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reality. They're fools because they have something, but they can't use it. They don't even see the value of it. So do they really have something? Does that make sense?
In relation to this, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, while explaining the levels of devotional service, Jiva Goswami makes a note that it's the tendency to think that the Jnanamishra Bhaktis have more knowledge than the Vrajavasis like that. Mm. But if they really had more knowledge, why couldn't they deal with the Lord always? Mm. The Vrajavasis, they could be with the Lord always. That means they have no knowledge about the absolute truth.
Mm.
In like material world also, we accept that practical knowledge is actually higher knowledge than theoretical knowledge.
Yeah, so that's why there's the guy who figured out the knowledge, and he works at the university, and he gets paid whatever he gets paid. I don't know, what do professors get these days?
One lakh.
Okay. In India. Okay. A month. Or a year.
One month.
Okay.
This is the best universities.
The best universities. But that's funny, when Radhajivan was a kid, he went to Dune school. And in those days, the professors, because that would have been back in the, you know, like the 60s, early 70s, that when he went to school there, the professors there got 40,000 a month. So nowadays they're getting a lakh, it's not that great.
Now all the people who train, like the coaching institute guys, they get much more.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now the guys that can now do something with that, then they're going to get way more than that. You know, so that's the whole point. It's even the material world. It's if you have the knowledge, that's nice, but if you can use it, that's better.
So only when it is used, it is concrete.
Only when it's used as concrete, yes. Otherwise, it may become concrete in the way of you value to talk about this knowledge, but it's not actually real at that point. So that's why we say it can't be understood by logic. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
So therefore, devotees are not called jnanis from this point, because they never speculate just for the sake of knowledge itself.
Yes, yes.
Use it.
That's why it's jnana yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Jnana yoga. Is that they're engaging that knowledge in the Lord's service. So they have more knowledge detachment, so they're not as involved in the world. So they don't have to get involved and engage so much activities or so much of the senses or facility. So then that would be the jnana yoga, like that. But the point is, as Prabhu is pointing out, is that that pure devotion, then we're saying is that it's beyond, because it's not about the knowledge, it's about the use. So they're able to apply that knowledge in their life. But we can see as persons like King Yudhishthira can connect the whole kingdom to the Lord. So that's the thing, is that they're more expert. So for us, it's simply a stage we use, because first of all, you know, we just have material knowledge. Then we start to see it connected to Krishna. Then we start to connect those things to Krishna. Right? But it's because of our attachment. Then as we get purified, we give up the attachment, so we don't have to work in so many areas. Then we work in that, and because we're working in a smaller area, then it has the advantage that you could focus very nicely. But then when it gets to more, then it's a matter of you're absorbed in Krishna. Then it's whatever situation you're in, and that's all connected to Krishna. Otherwise, the others, you're not distracted by material energy, and therefore then you're, you know, engaged in devotional activities. But here it's that the Brajbasis is whatever they see, or whatever they contact with their senses, they see it in context of Krishna. So they're way beyond any jnani or rishi or muni or anything. Because they're not on that level. Their focus, their absorption, their width of knowledge. They only know how to deal with the Lord in the area of detachment. But here they see everything connected to Krishna. So it's beyond, but it's not about the everything, it's about Krishna. So the everything is seen in context of Krishna. And so that's what we're saying, is that on the materials, they see everything not connected to Krishna. Okay. Does that make sense? Yes?
The difficulty we faced with the using a previous example is that people protested that it sounds like we say user is actually in a better position than the developer. So how can we reconcile this?
Not the user, the one who knows how to apply it. See, someone develops something, but they don't know how to use it. Someone else then applies it, then it becomes a value. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Otherwise, that means it's all part of the process of in knowledge, but we see is that knowledge that you can apply and get a result is going to be more complete than this knowledge that's something to talk about. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if it's knowledge to talk about was the top, then our example, all those guys down at the pub, they're the most elevated people on the planet, because they talk about everything and they got an opinion on everything. You know?
And they're in ecstasy all.
And they're also, yeah, they're always on the... Yes. Yes.
Does it mean that all of our attempts to preach to poor are fully useless?
No, because the point is the scholars on their own, that's fully useless. But when they come in contact with devotees and get the association of devotees, that's always useful. Right? Does that make sense? And so, because they work in the academic field, you use the academic speak to impress them. But we know that it's actually Krishna who's the impressive one. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is their knowledge, they can just see the fact. They don't actually, just like, let's say someone comes and sees this wall. So they just see it and they see the bricks and they're analyzing it and scraping off little bits and putting it under the microscopes. They're trying to analyze what is this thing. Like that. Now from that, they can analyze, okay, then it's made out of these, you know, things that it's been earth, it looks like it's been, you know, somehow subject to heat and all this, and it's, you know, and this particular brick has, or whatever it is that they call it, then has a particular, you know, these volume of these particular, whatever it is, chemicals or elements within it. You know, like that, and then the mortar is something else, and then we see that it comes out places and up, and why is, you know, things like that, and then, you know, what's doing, and then how much can you bring it out before it falls off. That's why they put it only that much. And so they figure out many things, the mechanical things. But will they ever, from that process, be able to understand that it's a wall and why there's a wall and who put it there? That's the whole thing. That they can't understand. And then they'll say, oh, that's sentiment. So having put up the wall, it's just sentiment the guy put it up. And so the guy that, you know, made the brick or built the wall, he's the real scientist. And the guy who paid for it and put it up and planned, you know, that he's the sentimentalist. You understand? So that's the problem is that things get reversed. When you start to apply it, since they can't, then they'll say that's all sentiment. You know, we're only interested in pure knowledge. Right. So then, if you're only interested in pure knowledge, then, you know, do the Diogenes thing. Live in a barrel. Like that. Why are you so interested in your position, your payment, you know, your office, your particular chair, like that?
That's the extension of the barrel.
Extended. It is still the barrel, right? You know, it's just got windows and all the things like that. Yeah.
I want to ask about mythological point of teaching.
Mythological point.
Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj invited all devotees who have some scientific degree, and he wanted to create magazine for teaching to scientists biologically and scientifically and in order. And I want to ask, will it work if they will just give it, or we need first to give them prasadam without
No, the point is that you have the hearing part. They're hearing from authority, mm-hmm. So it'll have effect. Then you add prasadam onto that, then it's more. Yeah, each magazine comes with a little thing of you know, just like you sometimes get those ads and, you know, with the thing you rub on it and get the smell. You know, you can do that also, right? Put in the thing that's been offered to the deities, you know, like that, and they smell it. Every magazine comes with a box of cookies or something.
Scientists are like kids.
Huh?
They say that scientists are like kids, big kids.
So yeah, kids, yeah. No, if you find the thing that they're into, there they are, big kids. So you could consider that. But the point is, just hearing, they'll get benefit. You're adding on to that. There's kirtan, and there's, you know, association, or it's just you're trying to add to what's there. So for someone, if they have more jata sukriti, then by just reading that, then they'll come to that understanding. For someone else, it'll just add something, you know. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premadana.